I'm Sarah Hurd, and welcome to Assignment Radio, KGOU's student-produced news magazine. Today, we'll hang out with a local musician and a bus driver and visit the McFarland Food Pantry. And later on in the program, we'll explore the intersections in our lives in the form of military wives, international roommates, and gay students at OU. Construction projects on the OU campus are making it hard to find a parking spot. Now, many OU students are taking the Cleveland County Rapid Transit, or CART bus, to and from class. Assignment Radio's Courtney Kirby rode along with a bus driver who makes a special effort to connect with her passengers.
Come on, guys! Hustle, hustle!
25 copies.
My name is Shirley Boscowan. I've been doing this since August 27th, 1984.
Come on, sweet pea!
I am the first contact that people have with CART. I am a bus driver, and I feel that I am a source of information to people, and I just transport them from point A to point B.
800 to 805, are you going to be able to pick up the rest of them, or is it getting too many?
I usually drive Lloyd Noble LNC. I was on apartment loop for 20-some years. I've driven Lindsay East, West, Main Street, Alameda once or twice.
Well, I'm not there yet, but from what I can see, I'll be able to get them all.
Okie dokie.
The driving is boring. You know, you drive back and forth and back and forth, but I get enjoyment out of is talking to people, kidding people, laughing with them, picking on students.
The driving is...
You have to get out on your knees and beg.
The passengers I have, I have a connection with them.
At the beginning of the first 2 weeks, I call them hell weeks.
I pick on them.
We are bombarded.
I try to get them to sing to me.
I do
all kinds of stuff.
They don't have a time schedule yet.
They're a great bunch of kids.
They don't know what time they need to be there, how to ride it sometimes. So the first 2 weeks are really, really hectic. We had a whole bunch down here until people found out where they could go.
Now approaching the Lloyd Noble Center for shuttle stop. This is the Lloyd Noble Center.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
Y'all be careful going home.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Come on, guys.
Good morning.
I had to charge you an extra $5 now.
Okay.
Okay. You looked like I was serious there for a minute. I yeah. thought you were going to get in your pocket and get it for me. To do this job, you've got to relate to people. You know, make them feel that you know them, and all of us like that. You, me, everybody else. They want to be recognized, you know. Oh, she remembers me. And I do remember a lot of people. I don't know names. I'm terrible with names. That's the reason everybody's honey and darling. Sweet pea and my chickadee. And I was told one time I get in trouble for saying that. I says, okay, I get in trouble. And it's not happening. I've been doing it 30 years. Apparently nobody takes me seriously. Where are you going, darling?
Okay.
You're just going with me?
Okay.
You gonna stay with me all day?
No.
Oh gosh, now you're gonna make me cry. I thought I had a friend for the day. Now I'm serious, where are you going to and maybe I can help you? What you can do is you can catch research, and it comes right back down here, and it leaves at 15 and 45. And they have a stop right across the street at Walker Tower.
It's like everything that you do, you have to make it entertaining and fun for yourself, and that makes it entertaining and fun for everybody else.
The music on this week's show is by University of Oklahoma alumnus and electronic musician Ben Hill. I spent some time with him in his Oklahoma City studio to get a feel for his process and his philosophy when it comes to creating and performing music. The sound of Oklahoma City musician Askance defies easy categorization. It's electronic music, but computers are just a tool that producer Ben Hill uses to find, make, layer, and manipulate every sound he can imagine.
I get a lot of ideas just throughout the day, biking around, or a lot of times usually when I'm taking showers for some reason, that's like a zone, and I just hear sounds or even like whole song structures in my head, and I try to realize that.
As the brain behind Askance, Hill combines the sounds of birds and flutes with both acoustic and electric beats on tracks like this one, Growing Comfortable, Uncomfortable. He self-produces under a label he calls Casita Records, a reference to the travel trailer on his grandmother's property, where he began layering the sounds he heard around him.
I would just take a tape player out into the woods and then just leave it there for a long time and like come back later and pick it up and listen to the whole thing, which would be like 45 minutes of forest noise, and then just pick out my favorite parts.
For Hill, music is just like any art form. It takes hours to develop the skills to make something sound effortless.
Nothing survives the process. It's usually like I have an idea, I make it, and then I think about ways I could take that idea further.
When Hill finishes a track, he packs up his gear and goes to whatever living room, record store, or small music club will give him and his collaborators space on their floor to perform. The tags on the Casita Records webpage describe the music as electronic, down-tempo, and experimental, but that doesn't capture it entirely. When Askew, the live iteration of Askance heard here playing a song called Candor, performs, it feels like jazz at some points and new age at others. During his performances, Hill continually makes eye contact with people in the crowd, making sure they're connecting with what he's creating in front of them.
I can just see that people are engaged with me and what I'm doing. You just kind of know that, like, oh, I should make this part longer, or I should like suddenly change it up now, because it's just part of this journey that we're on.
When performing live, Hill says everything is intuitive. He gets lost in the moment and in the sounds emerging from his equipment. It's easy to move from one piece to the next. Everything is seamless. He loses sense of time.
If it's going well, then it's just kind of bliss, you know. It's something that you're just into, totally in that moment. Kind of like a meditation, or almost like a dream.
Ben Hill has developed his own style over his years of producing, and he tries to make music that's new and different. He wants to create something that other musicians will think is interesting.
I'm really trying to be aware of everything that's been done in that genre and think about ways in which it could be done interesting or different. And that's hard, to make a song that isn't boring, that doesn't just like do exactly what I think it's gonna do.
Hill spends 40 to 50 hours per week working on music. He records himself playing instruments and old records, and then digitizes the sounds and manipulates them in computer programs like Ableton. Music is the 25-year-old's true passion, but he doesn't have any delusions about the difficulty of making a living from it.
It'd be sweet, but I don't bank on it happening, and I don't feel entitled to it happening or something. I think that would just make me bitter.
When he's not producing music, Hill works as a pedicab driver, transporting tourists around in what could be described as a bike-drawn carriage. Despite the odds, and his degree with honors in economics, he plans to continue making music.
You make it as long as you feel compelled to make it, and inspired. And so even if you're an accountant, you're still making music because you like to do it.
Ben Hill has a collaboration with fellow musicians Sardash and Lane Bergeron called Harpa. They're going on tour to California and the Pacific Northwest in January. Hill says he's not sure when he'll be back. He says Oklahoma City's small electronic music scene is starting to make him claustrophobic. For Assignment Radio, I'm Sarah Hurd. Links to music by Askance and Harpa, as well as a full story with photos, are on our website, kgou.org. As we enter the holiday season, it's important to keep in mind those who are struggling to get by this time of year. Student reporter Patrick Smith talks to a few volunteers at the McFarland Food Pantry in Norman about their mission and how they make it happen.
You want one of these too? Okay.
On an afternoon in the week before Thanksgiving, there are several volunteers organizing food and supplies into shopping bags. This is the food pantry run by McFarland Memorial United Methodist Church. It is open every Tuesday and Thursday in a small building behind the main church and serves Norman area residents.
The way we do it is every 14 days you can get everything. We have some people that just come in and get ready to eat meals, bags that we prepare for that, and they can come every 7 days for those meals.
That's Karen Toby, a volunteer who helps operate the food pantry every week. It's run entirely by volunteers from the church, like Richard Dennis, who's been working with the food pantry for about 3 years.
We get a truck from the regional food bank every other, or twice a month, and there's a group of us that unload the truck, and we put everything away, and there's a person that order, does all the ordering, and people that help shelve things and stack things, and we even have some diapers and things for young children. And so we get frozen goods and packaged goods.
Everyone has a job to do. Gene Wilson checks people in when they arrive, but also helps wherever it's needed.
I usually take their names and verify that they live where they do at the desk. But other than that, sometimes I fill bags. Sometimes I reload, restock the shelves. We just kind of all do a little bit of everything.
However, Richard Dennis says there's just one restriction on who can get food from the food pantry.
You know, our clients, the people come in, basically they have to be a Norman, Little Axe, or Noble resident. And they have to have proof of residence and some sort of ID with their face on it. And so, but we don't ask income or anything like that. You know, if they're here, they get the food.
According to Karen Toby, the church moves quite a bit of food monthly.
Our months are averaging about 650 bags of food we give away. So some of those are the same people coming, you know, twice during the month. But a lot of them are just separate individuals or families.
The volunteers have met people with stories that have stuck with them throughout their time at the food pantry.
We had one person who rode a bicycle here from I-35 and Indian Hills with a cast on her leg. And we also had a person, have had a person who walks and has, in fact, was in today, and he walks back and forth to the city, to Oklahoma City, to help take care of his mother.
Karen Toby says the week before Thanksgiving is always busy because they aren't open on holidays, so most of the people come in on Thursday and the following Tuesday to get their food. She says there's one particular part of volunteering at the food pantry that makes it all worth it.
Well, just those people who say, thank you so much, I couldn't make it without you, God bless you. You know, there's a lot of gratitude from the people that are here, and we're just happy that we are here to help them.
For Assignment Radio, I'm Patrick Smith.
There are several ways to help out the McFarland Food Pantry. Details about ways to donate time or money to the organization are on our website, kgou.org. You're listening to Assignment Radio. I'm Sarah Hurd. For the second part of our program today, we focus on the theme of intersections, the points at which paths cross. Just like the streets in a city or lines on a graph, people's individual journeys through life can often converge briefly before continuing in different directions. These moments can teach us about a different way of looking at the world and even alter the way we look at ourselves. The spouses of servicemen and women sometimes connect with each other for a short time before they move to a new base or a new country. As Courtney Kirby reports for Assignment Radio, social media helps these people create relationships and maintain them over long distances.
Life as part of a military family is full of intersections. One intersection is the connections military spouses make with each other. There is the problem of navigating long-distance moves to unfamiliar cities and towns, as well as maintaining the household during overseas deployments of the military member.
Abby Morris.
Amber Bauer.
Abby and Amber both have a spouse active duty in the Air Force. They met on a Facebook page created for military spouses to connect, vent about life, and ask questions that only other experienced spouses would understand. Abby needed the connection with another spouse, and she found a friend in Amber.
My husband was, well, fiancé at the time, was deploying to UAE, and I had posted in one of the spouses' groups just looking for people who had been through or going through the same thing, and she was one of the first people that messaged me.
Amber is all too familiar with Abby's story because it's so similar to her own.
And I messaged her because I was in the same position as her at one point. She wasn't married yet, so there's not a lot of support for girlfriends or fiancés. And when me and my husband first got together, he deployed 3 months later, and I had no help through it because I wasn't a wife. So I had like a soft spot in my heart for her.
They became close friends fast, meeting and chatting over sushi every week. Abby explains their common bond is deeper than just having an Air Force spouse.
Our husbands are the same rank. They work in the same shop. They've been at Tinker the same amount of time. So when stuff happens in the shop, we can talk to each other about it when stuff gets frustrating that people normally don't understand.
Right.
Friendships between military families come with a downside. They know from the beginning that they won't always live near one another. Abby and her husband are moving soon.
We just got orders to Wichita Falls. We leave in May.
On the other hand, Amber and her family have been at Tinker Air Force Base for a long time and probably won't leave anytime soon.
Well, this is Jeff's first duty station. We've been here for 7 years. He doesn't have anything on his dream sheet, though, so we probably won't go any well if they're leaving, though.
Social media has drastically changed how spouses connect and keep in touch, both when they are near and far. Abby says she and Amber are friends because of Facebook.
Well, without social media, her and I probably would have never met.
Most of Amber's friends are online, and just recently she met several for the first time, even though they had been friends online for close to a year.
I know most of my so-called friends, especially military wife friends, I don't know a lot of them personally. Most of it's, I'm like best friends with them online, but I've never met any of them personally. Yesterday, I went to a ladies' night in, and I was friends with probably 5 of the people that were there on Facebook, and that was my first time meeting them, and I've been friends with them for probably a year or so online. And I talked to them every day online, and it was nice to finally be able to put a name to a face and an actual person.
But Amber finds that even with Facebook and other online resources, keeping up with friends who have moved away isn't easy. Sometimes, Amber says, keeping the friendship active online is hard over distance. And sometimes, friendship stays strong.
I actually have a few friends who have left, so maintaining that friendship with them leaving, sometimes it can feel more one-sided because I'll be the one that makes all the effort, mostly online. I do have one friend. She kind of took me in like I took her in whenever I was just dating my husband, and they've moved to Texas, and I'm actually going to go down there this summer to go visit them because they're renewing their vows.
Abby and Amber say they are determined to keep their friendship strong. Abby says they plan on making lots of trips to see each other once she and her family move to Wichita Falls.
Oh, yes. Especially yep. Since she's only going to be 3 or 4 hours away. It'll make it a lot easier yep. than if we were in a whole nother country or something.
Even though these friends will miss each other, both of them know every base is a new intersection of people, and with that comes more friends. For Assignment Radio, I'm Courtney Kirby.
Links to resources like the Facebook page mentioned in Courtney's story are available on the Assignment Radio page of our website, kgou.org. College is a time for discovering oneself and making connections with people from all walks of life. For some people, that process of self-discovery might make them feel uncomfortable when they go back home, especially if they're gay. I visited one Thanksgiving alternative for queer students at OU, a place where they've found a community. Students pack around long plastic tables, talking and sharing turkey, pumpkin pie, and each other's company. It's called Queersgiving. In recent years, the term queer has been adopted by the LGBTQ movement. According to PFLAG, the nation's largest LGBTQ ally organization, the word is used to describe anyone who feels somehow outside the societal norms in regards to gender or sexuality. A dinner like this gives OU students who identify as queer a chance to meet and bond with each other. Haley Hinsberger is a linguistics and computer science major. She's from the suburbs of Chicago and was wary about coming to OU.
So yeah, I was worried, but like also the scholarship was probably worth it. So I was just like, well, this is fine. I will deal with it when I have to. I wasn't out at the time, but I was kind of like, well, you know, Oklahoma's not the greatest place probably to be gay. But it's fine because like nobody knows and I don't have to tell anyone.
OU Chemical Engineering senior Darius Dixon feels differently. He saw OU as a place he could feel more comfortable than he had in his hometown of Lawton.
It's a large, small town. People tend to know everybody. People's business gets around fairly easily. Coming here, I was allowed the chance to sort of be my gay self without having to worry about some of the social stigma that I know I would face in Lawton.
Both Hinsberger and Dixon believe becoming part of a community brought a sense of belonging. For Dixon, one night in particular signaled that he had found a home.
It was the first LGBTQ candlelight vigil I went to. There was just a sense of community there. It's powerful and reassuring to know that you have a community around you and people who can support you and accept you.
Hinsberger says one connection here changed her life, meeting her girlfriend.
First semester, I was like, what am I doing? And then I met her and it got much easier because I had this like super good friend. In fact, we were such good friends that we would like hug and hold hands all the time. And she was like, when I came out, pretty cool about it. So I was like, I can do this. It's fine.
Hinsberger is one of the heads of Queer Inclusion on Campus, or QUIC. It's an organization that has pushed for things like a gender-neutral housing option and a queer outreach center. Darius Dixon says every queer experience is different due to the concept of intersectionality.
Intersectionality is sort of like the convergence of multiple identities, like where race and gender come together, for example. I would say I'm a chemical engineer, a black student, I'm gay, and I'm a bit of a nerd.
Dixon is constantly navigating between the black community and the queer community, trying to find exactly where he belongs.
From the black side, sometimes you deal with some homophobia, while on the queer side, you sort of deal with the race dynamics within the community. And sometimes it can be confusing, difficult, and for some black queer people, they just don't really feel as though they fit in either community.
The University of Oklahoma has brought out a new side of Haley Hinsberger. Now, the senior has emerged an activist, something she never would have imagined back in Chicago.
I don't like confrontation, and like I'm really shy, and I prefer to like, if I have to speak out about anything, I want to be typing it, not saying it out loud. But coming here meant it was important to fight for things, and I couldn't just like hunker down and wait for other people to do it.
The college experience has changed how both of these students feel about themselves. It's also changed how they feel about living in Oklahoma.
I had always had the plan in my mind that as soon as I get my degree, I would go pretty much anywhere but here. But as things have gotten better for queer people in America, I figured, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing to live in Oklahoma around Norman, OKC.
I could stay here for as many years as I have to. Like, I can do the work that these people are doing, and it's going to be okay.
Here around the table, students pass the turkey and the sides, knowing they are welcomed and embraced by this community. For Assignment Radio, I'm Sarah Hurd. I saw some of the diversity on the University of Oklahoma campus reporting that story, and Assignment Radio's Patrick Smith saw it in his as well. Patrick didn't have to go far from his own bedroom to see the variety of experiences that OU students can have.
One group of OU students, people who had no idea who each other were before August, is just one example of the diversity of the Norman campus community. These students come from several different backgrounds. Some people probably wouldn't expect them to be friends at all.
My name is Flavio, and I'm from Guatemala.
My name is Xi Wenhui, I'm from China.
My name is Skylar Speaks, and I'm from Oklahoma City.
I'm the fourth person in this group, Patrick Smith. I'm from Dallas, so my background isn't too different from Skylar Speaks. But among the four of us, our cultures cannot be further apart. People we never would have thought of as anyone more than a stranger passing by, we see every day at our four-bedroom apartment. We've intersected paths by what can only be chance, but Flavio thinks things are going pretty well so far.
I think it's pretty nice. It's going way better than I expected, actually. I never thought we were going to have a pretty diverse group, and also, I feel like even though we don't see each other all the time, we work pretty well. I mean, we haven't had any big issue. So, no, it's a great experience. I got to meet wonderful people that I never expected.
Not only do we come from unique backgrounds, we each have separate reasons for being a part of the OU student body, reasons as different as we are from each other. Flavio is getting a master's degree in aerospace engineering. She is doing postdoctorate work in the field of biophysics. Speaks is working towards an undergraduate degree in psychology. I'll be finishing my degree in journalism. We've all been a part of the Norman community for pretty different periods of time.
I got here in fall 2011.
I have been here just for 3 months.
19 years, about to be 20, so I guess 20 years in Oklahoma.
I moved to Norman in fall of 2012. An interesting aspect of how, when, and where these intersections in life happen is each person brings his own distinctive perspective to the situation.
I think the most shocking thing about Oklahoma was the weather, and I soon realized that people really mean when they say, if you don't like the weather, just wait, because it's crazy. Back home, it's like pretty much the same weather the whole year.
My first impression is about the people here are much more friendly than in China. In the first time I come here, for the first 2 weeks, I got a lot of help from all around, and even the stranger on the road, they will give me a lot of help. I'm very glad of that.
Flavio said the initial move to Oklahoma wasn't too different from his home in Guatemala, as the people are typically friendly in both places. But for Xi, he didn't know quite what to expect.
I think the random roommate is quite a surprise for me, because before I came to America, I see a lot of news about that American. You don't know your neighbors, and perhaps your neighbor was a rapist or even some killer. I admit I was misled by the news, but after all, I found that it's quite different. I have got very good roommates, and since that, I really think I know a lot. I knew much more about Americans. Yeah.
She isn't the only one learning new things about the world around him. Speaks says that talking to Xi about what life is like in China has changed his perspective on his own home.
Well, I feel kind of dumb with Xi, but he's kind of a genius. But he talks about how much more productive America is than China, and that's kind of reassuring that we're not completely going downhill as a country.
This is one of the best parts about our dynamic as roommates. The perspectives we can discuss whenever we want isn't something a lot of people can take advantage of. It could bring attention to things we often take for granted, as she did when I asked him what stuck out when he first got here.
In Oklahoma City, yes, the sky is very, the weather is very clean, and you can see a lot of stars in the night. That's another thing that I was astonished when I first came here, because in China, you know, for example, in Beijing, you can even see less than 10 stars in the night. It is very different from here.
We are all very different. Age, nationality, interests, none of us is the same. But at this intersection in our lives, we can make the best of the opportunities to learn that we all have. For Assignment Radio, I'm Patrick Smith.
You've been listening to Assignment Radio, KGOU's student-produced public affairs program focusing on issues and events around Oklahoma. The views expressed on this show do not represent those of KGOU or its licensee, the University of Oklahoma. Digital versions of all the stories are online at kgou.org. I'm Sarah Hurd. Thanks for listening.